afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this February 28th, final day of Black History Month edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network, in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right. This is the last day of Black History Month. Well, we are running a bit late here, but we're hoping to hear quickly from one of our special, very special guests for today, Hakeem Adabudi. Dr. Hakeem Adabudi celebrated his 80th birthday last Saturday, and I thought it would be a good occasion to have a part of that celebration discussed here on WBAI. So we'll be doing that hopefully momentarily. But also tomorrow, March 1st, is the birthday of the legendary Banana Boatman, Adeo Isateo. Yes, Mr. B, we call him. Harry Belafonte will be 95 years old tomorrow. And so let's give Mr. B a big shout out. What a legendary, incredible figure in the history of the global struggle for human rights, beginning with his connection with Dr. King and so much that he did over the years. So we certainly want to have everybody do that. Also, just want to quickly say that this is the last day of Black History Month. Our guests following the Dr. Hakeem Adabudi will be none other than Don Rojas, the legendary Don Rojas, who was a previous general manager at WBAI. And he'll be talking to us about a Black History Month global forum this evening, which is going to be talking about from Black History Month to African History Month and the launch of the Black World Media Network. So Don Rojas will be following us here after our interview with Hakeem Adabudi. Well, I think he's now joined us, our esteemed guest for today, no stranger, really, to the airways of WBAI. We've talked to him on other occasions. In fact, I'll never forget on one occasion when we were in the middle of a major, major effort to try to just keep things afloat. Dr. Hakeem Adabudi donated scores of books from Third World Press Foundation. And that was one of the more popular premiums that we've had in the last several years. So I'm now delighted to welcome to these airways once again my dear beloved friend, Dr. Hakeem Adabudi. Hakeem, welcome to Vantage Point.
Well, how you doing, Doc? How you feel?
I'm feeling good. Whenever I can talk to you, I am feeling great. Well, before we get into the meat of our interview with you, I just wondered whether you might want to share some thoughts on the 95th birthday of one Harry Belafonte. Just your thoughts about this great man.
Great is the right term for him. He has done an awful lot for our people, for his people also, obviously. And I've had the pleasure to meet and be in the presence of both Harry Belafonte as well as Sidney Poitier. And these two brothers, at great risk, did come out to support, most certainly, Dr. King and our struggle. And for him to be hit 95 is truly a major achievement. And last time I saw him, he was still moving rather quickly.
Right.
That was about two or three years ago.
Right.
So, yes, he's a serious brother and has done serious work in our struggle, not only as an actor, but also as a human rights struggler. And he's a director, writer, and he has set a high bar for the young actors and directors and writers and so forth today. So it's good that will be celebrated tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, I always say he was in the tradition of Paul Robeson, really. I think he really was a manifestation of the kind of courage and vision and sacrifice or commitment that Paul Robeson was able to make. And I think he sees himself in that tradition and certainly, like you said before, set a very high bar. Well, moving on, we just again...
Let me say a couple of things about Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson and W.B. Du Bois are my adopted grandfathers.
Mm.
And... the boys and I were born on the same day. And Roberson was a student of Du Bois, okay? Mm-hmm. And Margaret Burroughs, who was one of my mentors, was a friend of Paul Robeson's, as well as Du Bois, because they come out of that old serious left tradition.
Right.
And even communist tradition before it got a very negative handle on it.
Right.
And so Paul Robeson, W.B. Du Bois, they led the way for all of us.
Right. Right.
And so, yes, but not only Harry Belafonte, but Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Are in that tradition, really
right.
In that tradition. And they are
strong
friends
tradition.
Also. So, these, of course, Ruby and Ozzie are not with us any longer. But the point is that we all have benefited in untold ways in terms of our own struggle. What you were doing, what we're doing in Chicago and abroad and around the country.
Right.
So, and which brings us to what's happening, in fact, 1 or 2 days left to sign up for the 1,000 signatures for Marcus Garvey.
Right.
You know, trying to get him
exonerated.
Essentially a pardon. Right.
Right.
So that goes for Justice for Garvey, Justice JUSTIC, the number 4, then Garvey, GRVY. So this trouble continues at so many different facets, and you are leading the way. And I heard that Don is coming on after me, and he's again another brother who is such pace for us.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about you and your 80th birthday. What a great great celebration, reaching the iconic 8 decades on the earth, actually. So again, and I consider it an honor to be considered, you know, a friend and comrade in the struggle, and participated on this last Saturday with your family and close friends. I was just really moved to be even in their company. But I just want to, and you've already began to talk about it a little bit, but for our audience, I had forgotten about the book Think Black. I mean, you've written so many books, and then everybody was raising their copies of Think Black, and oh, I remember that. So how did you evolve, in a way it's not really talking about, how did you evolve from Don L. Lee to Dr. Haki Madhubuti?
Well, the evolution started really back in Detroit, Michigan, when I was 14 years old and reading. My mother asked me to go to the library and check out Richard Wright's Black Boy. And I refused because I hated myself. Hmm. I hated my color. I hated my living circumstances. And everything about it. My mother was in the sex trade, okay? So I saw her selling herself to take care of my sister and me very early. And this is one of the reasons I've become so close and stayed very on point with black women and mostly women of the world. And once I read Black Boy and began to read everything that Richard Wright had published, and he published a very important book that very few people are familiar with, it's called White Man Listen, a book of essays. And in that book was a very important essay on what they call Negro literature at that time. And he mentioned all these Negro or black writers, and I began to systematically read them at 14, 15, 16 years old. And that led me to the consciousness that I have today. Led me to essentially getting involved in black struggle at a very early age. Ended up in the military at 18 years old. Having nothing but strife and problems in the military, almost got put out, almost got a dishonorable discharge because I was fighting all the time. And the fights came about as a result of dealing with these arcade, low-information white men. And
right.
But as a result of that, my intellectual development continued to go up because I was a reader. And while I was in the military, I read close to a book a day. And in reading, I would write a 250-word essay. And my reading was basically black literature, wherever I could find it. And that's how I, you know, began to build my library and began to write. So I'm writing book reviews and writing poetry in high school and so forth. And it just continued on in that manner until I began to meet people who essentially love black people. And this is the key point. And I'm asking all over the country, all over the world, you know, why do you keep doing this? Why do you do this? Why do you build these institutional structures? And my answer is a very clear one and very simple one. I love black people.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? It's not about hating anybody. It's about whom I love black people. And I understand that we all do what we've been taught to do. So if you're essentially around negative black people or backward black people or Negroes who think they're black, understand this very salient fact. What these Negroes are doing or what these imitation black people are doing, that's what they've been taught to do. That's what they've been taught to do. Not only in this country, worldwide. Now, if you understand that fact, then you give them some quarter and say, okay, then it's my responsibility to show them and to try to teach them a different way. But you can only do that by building at one level independent black institutions. Why? Because you look at the world, say in this country, most certainly, the stabilizing factor in the United States are its institutions. You see, from medical to educational, you know, to military, it doesn't matter. Whatever human category, they have institutional structures. Our problem is this. The major institution in the black community is the Negro church. Mm. And I use the word advisedly because most of the churches in the black community are Negro churches. And we're talking about essentially 100,000, at least 100,000. So if you say 100,000 Negro churches and out of the 100,000, let's say we got 10,000 are black churches. Okay, give ourselves 10,000. But people do not realize that not only is a major institution, spiritual institution most certainly, and even educational to a large extent, is the black church or the Negro church, the major business in the black community is the black church or the Negro church.
Right.
See, that's the difference there. When you look at other cultures, most certainly you look at the Jewish, the Irish, the Polish, the Jewish, whatever the case may be, they have made a separation between their business side and their spiritual side. Okay, well, we have not completely made that separation. And I saw that early as a young man, young boy coming up in Detroit, Michigan. My mother was one of the prettiest women in Detroit in 1955. She was Miss Barmaid of 1955, okay? Working at one of the major barmaids, and of course she got hooked on drugs and all alcohol and so forth, and set on the body. But my point is that she was initiated into the sex business, the sex trade, by black ministers. We went to the largest black church. I'm not going to mention the Mr. Minister's name now. We went to the largest black church in Detroit in the 1950s. We sit in the front row. We had just came from Arkansas. The minister could not take his eyes off of my mother. The guy stumbled through his sermon and everything, all right? So we leaving the church, he's out front, and as soon as we hit the door coming out, he grabs her hand and whispers in her ear. And in less than two weeks, we moved into one of his apartment houses. He was in real estate. And we moved into a basement apartment in one of his apartment buildings, and she was supposed to be the janitor, okay? But what I learned from that, not only in terms of her servicing him, she began to service other ministers too. Well, he told her never to come back to his church. That is what turned me off from this religion right there. When he told my mother, after he started having sex with her, not to ever come back to his church, then I knew that this was a good portion of these people were hypocritical. See?
Right.
And so... But so that led me to reading and studying at a serious level because I realized at that 13, 14, 15-year age, nobody's going to take care of us but us. And I knew that I did not have the talent nor the skills at such a young age that I had to study. And that's what I've been doing all my life. And as a result of that, and we talk about this often, Ron, you and I, and some of the people that's coming on this evening, most certainly I can speak for Marlon Karinger, and probably for Rojas also, we've been in this struggle for black liberation all of our adult lives. All of our adult lives. And what we've done in Chicago over the last 55 years, we have built institutions.
Right.
We have Third World Press, we have Third World Press Foundation. We have three schools. We have the Ben Shabazz Academy. We have the Barbara Ann Sizemore Academy, a new concept school. And we all of them are now 501c3s. And so what do conscious people do? Conscious people look after themselves and look after the generation that's coming after them. Because just as Franz Fanon has basically articulated himself, virtually working in Algiers, and I've been to Algiers, that each generation defines the struggle for themselves.
That's right.
And what we've done, our generation, is that we set a platform. We set it. We set it. So now our children come on, and they will keep what we have going and develop what they feel is necessary themselves.
Right.
I'm sorry to go so on and on.
I want to put a pin on it. I made a note to myself because on the reparations front, one of the things that we've been doing is raising up the little-known massacre that took place in the Bloody Red Summer of 1919 in Elaine, Arkansas.
Right.
And as a result of that, which I knew very little about, frankly, but we're lifting it up now, we discovered that Richard Wright's, I think it was Richard Wright's uncle, if I recall correctly, was lynched in Elaine, Arkansas. And his daughter, Julia Wright, is very much working on trying to, work on getting some validation around that that particular issue. So we've actually been interfacing with Julia Wright's, the daughter. And so I'm gonna come back to you on that issue because I think you could be helpful in helping to raise the profile of this. I mean, Black Wall Street was Black Wall Street. We all know about it, the destruction of Greenwood, but arguably even more people were killed in Elaine, Arkansas. And it's terrible by any measure, but we've been really raising it up so people also know what happened in Elaine, Arkansas as well. So I'm gonna circle back to you, on that one. But let me just move on because you have had such an iconic life and you're still doing, you will continue certainly. But I'm just wondering whether you would share with our audience, just you've done so much, met so many people, and you've already talked about some of that, but some of the memorable moments in this sojourn, to year number 80 and going on towards the century mark. I mean, would you like to share just maybe a couple of thoughts of maybe people you met and their influence and impact? And again, you've already done some of that, but I'm just going to re-ask the question again.
Well, the people I met in this, over 60 some odd years involved in Black struggle are just tremendous. I mean, I can just start off with the people who mentored me, and they're all deceased now. Margaret and Charlie Burroughs, who were essentially co-founders of the DuSable Museum, which was a first Black museum in the country. El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X. Mm. I mean, Malcolm mentored me, but I never met him. But I was very close to Betty and the children, all right?
I know,
Most certainly, Dudley Randall. Dudley Randall, the fine poet, the first poet laureate of Detroit, Michigan. And the founder and editor of the first Black book publisher of Black poetry in the country, if not the world, Broadside Press, Dudley Randall. He published my first book, Think Black. And even to publish a book titled Think Black in 1967, I think that we were somewhat far ahead of everybody else, all right?
That's right, absolutely.
So Dudley Randall moved toward Hort W. Fuller. Hort W. Fuller was such a magnificent brother, one of the first Black intellectuals that I had the pleasure to be a family member to. He was the editor of Negro Digest, which became Black World Magazine.
Right.
And that was, as you know, the major monthly vehicle to come out over, 10 years, edited by Hort W. Fuller. And then after Hort W. Fuller was a great educator, Barbara Ann Sizemore.
Right.
Barbara Ann Sizemore was the first Black superintendent of the school system of Washington, D.C. And while she was a superintendent at Washington, D.C., I was on the faculty at Howard University, okay? And then, of course, the other person who essentially gave me life and became my cultural mother was the great Gwendolyn Brooks.
Oh, yes.
First Black to win the Pulitzer Prize in 1950. So Gwendolyn Brooks, first Black to win the Pulitzer Prize. Gwendolyn Brooks, when I met her in 1967, I had a copy of Think Black with me, and she was teaching poetry writing to members of the Black Stone Rangers, okay, in Chicago,
wow,
working with the great Oscar Brown Jr. People don't realize that Oscar Brown Jr. was one of the first Black rappers. He he preceded many of the black rappers that came about in the 70s. Most certainly, the brother, I can't even think of his name. Now, we published his book. You know who I'm talking about. The major black rapper who was a singer and the revolution would not be televised.
The Last Poets.
No, Gil Scott Heron.
Oh, Gil Scott Heron. Oh, yeah, Gil Scott. Yeah, right.
And so Gwendolyn Brooks, when I met her and gave her a copy of Think Black, she looked at the cover for about 8 or 9 seconds, put it to her heart, and said, "Young man, I'm going to read this tonight." And that started a 33-year familyhood. Okay.
Right.
Then I can go on and I can talk about Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee. I can talk about Susan Taylor. I can go on and just talk about brothers and sisters whom I met. Sonia Sanchez. I met Sonia Sanchez before she published her first book because I helped her get her first book published. And I wrote the introduction to her.
Right.
You know, I can talk about Nikki Giovanni. I can talk about all these people whom, and, you know, for 20 years, when I was on the faculty at Chicago State University, we put on major writers' conferences every year.
Right.
And we had major writers from Toni Morrison to Maya Angelou to Emilia Baraka. Now, I got a whole history with Emilia Baraka.
Right.
Leroy Jones. Okay.
Let me intervene because let me just say about Sonia Sanchez, because I just see y'all are like, for me, and I talk about this in the little piece I wrote in the tribute to you, because I was out of Youngstown, Ohio, then, you know, going over to Pittsburgh and just, you know, yeah, they had great sessions over there and seeing you and Sonia. And then over the years, it's almost like when you think about Haki, you think about Sonia. When you think about Sonia, you know, you think about Haki. Haki, let me just ask a couple other quick things as we just in our final moments, because and I know these are challenging questions and I knew they would be. But you have written, I mean, goodness gracious, I don't mean thousands of poems. And I think of some of them, you know, I just the way you just that art, that one you did about art that just like, you know, just makes the point. And the one you did on reparations. I'm just wondering, what would you think is the one or two most influential poems in your mind? Which ones do you think have had the most impact?
I think that art has had an impact because that's the one that people request, you know, a lot today. But if you're talking about from the 60s, it would be the piece I did on he would stop for green lights, you know, and then the change poem. Okay, the change poem really influenced the black poets the brothers you mentioned. The Last Poets.
The Last Poets, right.
Influenced The Last Poets quite a bit. And so I've been writing poetry since, you know, actually in the early 1960s while I was in the military. But
right.
I published books and edited as well as single-author books, about 36 now. And
right.
And the book I'm working on now, which will be out probably in the fall, basically is titled... The working title is "We Are Haiti People." Okay.
Right.
So let's
talk about books. Let's talk about books in the same way, because because that was my next question, and I know this is impossible, but I have to ask you anyway. So, you've done all these books, and I mean, there's so many of them. Claiming Earth to me there were so many of them, but Claiming Earth seemed to mark a kind of transformation, a broadening of scope in your thinking. I mean, just in terms of, and I haven't read them all because but some of them I have read, and that one just struck me. But and obviously Think Black is influential, but again, that maybe two books that you think have had the most impact in terms of moving the struggle forward.
I think that Claiming Earth will be one. And two would be, three, actually, From Planet to Planet, as well as Black Men, Obsolete, Single, Dangerous, African-American Family in Transition.
Right,
Black Men has sold, you know, it's close to being copies in print. And they used Black Men, they didn't use by the choice, but Black Men in Prison began to get copies of Black Men and pass it around. And so I would get all these letters from brothers in prison. Reading Black Men, Obsolete, Single, Dangerous. But one of my favorite books is Claiming Earth.
Right.
And
right.
we're going to bring Claiming Earth back out with a new introduction. You see, right. but Planet is coming back out soon, too. I mean, right. there's a large, we got large back orders from Planet to Planet. I mean, into thousands, you know, so we're bringing that back out.
Good.
Now, but let me just say this in ending that I think my major contribution to our people is basically building these institutional structures. And Third World Press will be 55 years old in September. And we have a new, really powerful board of directors now that are moving to take it to the next level. We got a new website coming out. We're going to hit within the next 2 weeks, a new website, which we put a lot of resources into. And so our move now is to make sure that Third World Press not only have moved toward to be 55, but moved toward the next 55 years. And Dumbala willing, I'll be around to see it. But anyway, the key point is, Ron, is that what you're doing with Institute of Black World 21st Century. And, you know, I was around when the Institute of Black World first came into existence because everybody from Vincent Harding to Howard Dobson to Stephen Henderson, these are all great friends of mine.
Okay? Oh, yes.
And I worked with them throughout. And most certainly, Laurent Bennett Jr. I can mention all of them. And so we've been here. And this, right. the key point is, how do we keep this struggle going at a very serious level where we do not become hypocritical, where we do not become, in many ways, you know, a lot of brothers and sisters in struggle who do not see or get what they feel they deserve, become very bitter. And that's the one thing, I would never become embittered because I know what happens to our people and
right.
how it has
right.
happened. Okay. And I can, you know, say thank you to you for staying very positive and doing this serious work and with the 21st century, into the Black World, 21st century. I mean, and one of the things I really appreciate what you did with Haiti, okay? Haiti is almost like an afterthought to our people, and they don't know. They just don't know. And so part of your responsibility, my responsibility, is keep this struggle alive by providing the information and providing a structure. And so what's happening this evening with this global communication is very important. You say, who else is going to do that other than you at this point? So, you know, thank you, dear brother. You know, thank you very much.
Well, we appreciate that, but you've been the inspiration, and you already answered the question about legacy, because what I thank you for is a lot of people. It's like there used to be the old I forget what they call it. But there was these little colloquialism in the Black community, and one of them was like Junebug Jabbo Jones, and one of the saying was a Mister Say ain't nothing, Mister Do is everything. And so we can be hot on the rhetoric, you know, everybody gonna build this, they're gonna do this and so forth. And by the way, this is not easy stuff. And the other thing I have to say too. And I was struck by this, and I've been struck by it before. And that's not necessarily a commentary on anybody else, because this struggle is brutal, it's difficult. But through it all, you have managed really. And by the way, I commented on you. You're an intelligent brother, because you married Safisha Badabudi. You always give her credit. This has been the smartest thing move you ever made. But your family, you preserve family. But finally, you are the great institution builder. I mean, you stubbornly. I mean, like a laser beam, you did, and you just did not relent, and you kept building and building and building. And so there stands, not only in terms of the bricks and mortars, but the concepts and values, the new concept development center, which encompasses all of them. I mean, it's a block in the city of Chicago that people can see and go and be nourished by and whatever. So that to me is your legacy, brother. You have just, and not finished. And so, I'm going to finish with this. What's next for Hakeem Madhubuti? You already talked about your next book, but you ain't finished, brother. You got a century and more to go. So what's next?
Well, the key point now is to make sure that Third World Press and Third World Press Foundation moves into the next half century. That's number one. But you mentioned my wife, and I think that people need to really look her up. Her birth name is Dr. Carol D. Lee. Carol D. Lee. Look her up. She is now the president of the National Education Foundation, academy, rather, academy, okay? But she's done so much in terms of her life and in terms of helping build these schools and everything else in Chicago. And so, again, we're trying to make sure that what we have built, along with many other people, stay alive. And number two, we stay alive. And that's the key point. How do you stay healthy? I'm plant-based. I've been a vegan for over 45 years. And so if it runs for me, it's not going to get eaten. And right. The key point always is to stay healthy. Never drank, never smoked, never ran the streets that much. You know, spent 3 years in the military and got out without, you know, being totally negative about black people and so forth. And actually, I care about this country. And which, you know, I can say that without contradiction. Because when you've traveled as much as we have, Ron, I've been to 4 or 5 continents. And I've been to Africa about 12 times, and I met 4 African presidents. And so my point is, black people, we got 50 million black people in this country. We're not going anywhere. Okay? When you realize that we're not going anywhere, then the key point is, what do you build? What do you control? What do you own while you're here? You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
One of my great friends, one of my great, like a brother to me, was a Dr. Walter Lomax. Walter Lomax out of Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
This brother was such an example in terms of owning and supporting black businesses. You know, his family owns WRD, which is the only black radio station in not only Pennsylvania, but Philadelphia. And his wife is still alive, Beverly Lomax. And the Lomax family, the brothers and sisters in the family, the young, their children are doing great work. So that's what we do, you see. And so, again, thank you for allowing me to come on for this, you know, few minutes to be with you and your audience and to say thank you for what you're doing. You and Mary, I mean, it's not easy, you see.
That's right.
But,
well,
another side of it, you're going to have people don't even like you for whatever reason. They don't care nothing about you.
Yeah, well, but one of the things I recount in the book I finally got out was a traveling story, and I was getting ready to leave, and my wife Mary Frances Daniels, who's an activist in All Rights, said, "Well, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to Chicago to meet with Hakeem Adebuti," and she said, "You ain't taking me," and my previous marriage, it was somewhat different because, it wasn't that kind of partnership. So I said, "You want to go?" She said, "Yeah, man." I brought her to with me, man, and we never looked back, man. We've been partners ever since, side by side. Jeez. So again, that was such an important experience for her. Haki, if people want to be in touch, is there a website or that people can go to?
They can go to thirdworldpressfoundation.org. ThirdWorldPressFoundation.org. That's the best way. And if you want to email, go to TWPress, TWPRESS, number 3@AOL.com. Right. We have a new one coming in with a new website, but just use that now. Okay.
Right.
And if they want to call us, just call. Telephone number has been the same for like 40 years, 773-651-0700. 773-651-0700.
All right. Well, Hakeem Adebuti, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. And it's been really great. And we look forward to working together for many, many, many more years. So we're joined to the hip and keep on pushing.
It will happen. Thank you, brother. Stay strong.
All right.
See you soon. Okay. Give my best to everybody tonight. Okay.
All right. Okay. Hakeem Adebuti, again, giving his tribute also to Harry Belafonte, who will be experiencing his 95th birthday tomorrow. And, just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. What a great brother. Man, you learn so much, and you hear that dedication and that strength in his voice. We're trying to connect with Don Rojas. We have this big forum that we're doing tonight, and he may be so busy working on it that he may have forgotten that he is supposed to be on the air with his family, his erstwhile family here on WBAI. We were supposed to have an interview with him, for him to talk about it and to really talk about his legacy and the work he's been doing. But I see we're having difficulty actually reaching him. Let me just say that, and let me just say that what we can do is obviously the audience becomes important because people may want to do two things. Number one, give a birthday shout out to Hakeem Adabudi, as well as to give a shout out to Harry Belafonte, Mr. B, we call him. And he, by the way, has been so great at doing intergenerational, cross-generational work. I know a lot of people are coming in town. Big celebration tomorrow for Mr. B, and that's Harry Belafonte, of course. So anyway, while we're waiting for Don, and he may not join us, I'm going to go open the phones up. We can also do that because we don't really have an alternative number that he can that we can reach him on at this stage. So again, he just may be tied up getting ready for tonight. But in the interim, let me give you the number, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. For the purposes of your reflections on Hakeem Adabudi, what is your favorite poem or favorite book as you salute Dr. Hakeem Adabudi? And, of course, maybe give a shout-out on from our WBAI family to none other than Harry Belafonte, Mr. B, one of the great, great, great leaders of all time, in the spirit, again, of Paul Robeson, a student of W.E.B. Du Bois. I mean, it is just so wonderful how Hakeem Adabudi laid that out. So 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. You can get it instantly now because of that. Let me just share with you that tonight, the Institute of the Black World 21st Century has launched what we call the Don Rojas's legacy project. And of course, Don Rojas was the press secretary for Maurice Bishop, which was an incredibly powerful position. And we wanted to ask him how he evolved in to be such a progressive revolutionary journalist, because that's how I first knew him and came to know him, was as the press secretary and director of communications for the People's Revolutionary Government under the leadership of Maurice Bishop. But then he's gone on to do much, much more: free speech television, the Amsterdam News, the editor there, going on to again be general manager at WBAI. He most recently actually created, helped launch the University of West Indies television network. And of course, some people may have forgotten, way before you had these internet platforms, there was a medium called the Black World Today, TBWT, with Herb Boyd, Brother Man, at his side, launching that project. And so we are so honored and blessed to have Don Rojas as the Director of Communications and International Relations for the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and are launching a multifaceted platform tonight. Well, it's already been launched, but has a major forum tonight. And we'll be really, it's about expanding Black History Month to become a global project. I understand we do now have Don Rojas on the line. So, comrade, brother Don Rojas, I thought maybe you had forgotten about us. I know you're so busy working on tonight's project. We've been trying to reach you. So I was just doing some filibustering, so to speak, until we got you on the line.
I had not forgotten you. There must be some gremlins on the line here, because the station has been calling me, and every time I called back, it was busy, and you know they couldn't get through. And oh my goodness, what?
Okay, we've got you, and of course, we just had a remarkable interview with Hakeem Adabudi.
I heard it. I was hoping that I'd be on to at least congratulate him on his 80th birthday. But it's always great to hear Brother Hakeem. He's such a revolutionary spirit and full of energy and positivity. And so it was lovely to hear his voice.
Right.
You know, I just wanted to wish him a very happy 80th, because I tell you.
Let's give you an opportunity to give a shout out to one of your Caribbean brothers, too, that I'm sure you're familiar with. In fact, I know on the Black World Media Network, Rennie Bishop, who's one of your key partners, is going to be doing a major piece tomorrow. But your shout out, if you will, to Mr. B, Harry Belafonte.
Oh, of course. I mean, Harry Belafonte, I had the privilege of meeting Harry Belafonte in person at his apartment in New York a few years ago. Professor Hilary Beckles and I paid him a courtesy visit, and we spent a delightful 2 hours sitting with him in his living room, and he was just reminiscing about his time with Dr. King, his early years in Jamaica, growing up as a boy in Jamaica, his family background, and on. It was just one of the most thrilling conversations that I've been involved in. And we now at the Black World Media Network have an opportunity to pay him his due respects in the way that we think he would enjoy, and also with that many of those who would be listening to our 24/7 online radio station, which is up and running. We will be broadcasting a one-hour special salute tribute to the great Harry Belafonte. Tomorrow is his 95th birthday. And Brother Rennie Bishop, who is an iconic radio personality in his own right and who's been working with us in developing the Black World Media Network, he has produced a brilliant one-hour special that integrates the music of Harry Belafonte, some of his most memorable songs, with interviews. So we hear his voice answering questions about the first time he met Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That was a wonderful experience, a wonderful story that I had never heard, but it's there in the special. He talked about the influence that Paul Robeson had on his life, both as an artist and as a political activist. Yes, that's all available on the Black World Radio Network. You want me to talk a little bit about the program tonight, Dr. D?
Yeah, we're a little pressed for time. I was giving a little sketch on it. But it's I have to correct you. It's not the Black World Radio Network. You told me not to call it that. It's the Black World Media Network, because its uniqueness is that it's multimedia, right? So give people a quick sketch of what the Black World Media Network is.
Well, of course, within the Black World Media Network, we have an online radio component that we call Black World Radio. But the Black World Media Network is a Pan-African multi-platform a digital network with news and music and commentaries and interviews from and about Black communities and Black countries all around the world. We offer a full range of content in multimedia format, meaning that you can read text and view photographs, meaning that you can listen to music and interviews and commentaries and news, and also means that you can view, because we have a robust video component. You can view videos from all over the Pan-African world. It's all there, and in a one-stop shop, you might say, a special space in cyberspace that we have carved out for our sisters and brothers throughout the Black world. And the Black world is an enormous community, a global community of a community of communities that comprise independent nations in Africa and the Caribbean, comprises large communities in the diaspora of North America and Europe. And of course, also, we're not forgetting our sisters and brothers, millions and millions of them in Latin America,
right?
In places like Brazil and in places like Colombia. So our effort here is to build a multi-platform network that reaches out, touches and connects our people all over the world to each other, so that they can learn from each other, they can support each other, and they can build a global solidarity movement to uplift those communities in which they live, those countries in which they live. It's a It's a broad, sweeping project, and we think that the time is right for such a thing.
Right.
The technology has evolved to the point where we can do some really cutting-edge stuff in both audio and video. And of course, there is a need for it. On a political level, there is a need for something like this at the global, in the global space.
Well, we just have a couple of more minutes left, so I really want to have people know, because there's a huge program tonight, the finale of the launch. And so if you would sort of give people the title of it and who some of the participants are and how people can, from our WBAI family, is who you work with for so many years, how they can plug in.
Yeah, we want to invite as many as you folks listening to this program to come back and join us online this evening at 7 p.m. For a special webinar. The title of it is Towards Global African History Month. And the concept behind it is to expand Black History Month in Black America to Africa, to the Caribbean, Central and South America, and to the diaspora. And this is a major event. We have a stellar lineup of speakers. Dr. Marlana Karenga, Professor Sir Hilary Beckles, Dr. Claire Nelson, Dr. Lisa Zakia, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, who is no stranger to the WBAI audience, and Professor Obume. We have Brother Pierre Sané in Senegal, who we hope will join us this evening. And all of this really is a tribute. We put together this program as a tribute to Dr. Carter G. Woodson. You might say he was the founder of the Black History Week, which then became Black History Month. And so it is in his honor that we are bringing together this stellar panel for a discussion that begins at 7 p.m. tonight. So how do you find it? You can find it on the Internet. By going to the IBW website, ibw21.org. You can find it on social media, and Facebook, and Instagram, and you can also find it on YouTube. So the idea is that wherever you are, in fact, you can also listen to it on your telephone, because we now have free mobile apps for the Black World Media Network that folks can download onto their cell phone, whether it is an Android phone or an iOS phone. And you can carry around the Black World Media Network with you whenever you are mobile. So we hope that you, as many of you, can join us this evening. We promise you it's going to be a dynamic program that you will very much enjoy, and I'm sure you'll be inspired by some of the contributions from our distinguished panelists.
Right.
So that's at 7 p.m. tonight, East Coast.
Right, and we should note that Dr. Julius Garvey will have a video insert, because because the people should also be aware that the Dr. Julius Garvey, the son of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and not just the son, someone who carries his legacy, has just launched Garvey Television. And there's a synergistic collaborative relationship between Garvey Television and the Black World Media Network. And by the way, to our audience, you can go right now to the IBW website, ibw21.org, and you can see the promo, and you can see how to connect, and share it with your friends. We want a huge audience for this, because the uniqueness of it is that this is Pan-African in scope. So that when you tune in, you hear the news broadcast is coming from a sister who's reading the headline news from all over the Pan-African world, from South Africa. And then we have people who are on the network who are, you know, are from various parts of the world. But even there's some familiar names. Reverend Dennis Dillon, you know, is going to have a program on it. Dr. Brenda Green, Tavis Smiley will be checking in, and George Frazier is already on board. The great George Frazier, Success Runs in Our Nation, the Power Networking. So we just have this phenomenal lineup of people who will be a part of the Black World Media Network. So anyway, Don, I know, let me let you get back to putting pieces together tonight for the program. And I will be joining you soon because I'm going to be moderating the program. I'm going to take a breath and jump right in with you. So thank you for joining us and being a part of our program today with your WBAI family.
Big shout out to my WBAI brothers and sisters. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's our show for today. And again, big shout out to Haki Matabudi, his 80th birthday. Also to Mr. B, Harry Belafonte, what an iconic figure. And our own legendary Don Rojas. This is Legacy Project, the Black World Media Network, a huge, powerful forum tonight, which we're talking about towards Global African History Month. We're talking about next year, everybody in the black world will be celebrating and commemorating and educating ourselves in Black History Month in memory of Carter G. Woodson. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels. I hope to see some of y'all tonight, but if not tonight, we'll see you again next week here on Vantage Point.
Time is truly wasted. We're tuned to listener-sponsored.